This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 7th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, our Rural Issues series continues with Scott Gurian asking what the presidential candidates think about the nation's ethanol policy. We'll also get a forecast from meteorologist Ed Keezer. First, a look at AM 580 News. Wearing a political button or attending a political rally is okay for University of Illinois faculty and employees as long as they do it off-duty and away from their specific workplace. That's the word from U of I President B. Joseph White in a memo emailed to faculty, staff, and students yesterday. White was responding to criticism of a newsletter from the University Ethics Office, which placed limits on political activities for campus employees under the state's ethics law. Dan Colson is a graduate employee who helped organize a Barack Obama rally on campus last week in defiance of that Ethics Office statement. He says President White's memo repudiates last week's directive.
We're pleased. I think we're pleased to see Joseph White recognizing the importance of free speech on the university campus and a willingness to assert students, graduate students, and faculty's right to express that free speech on campus.
White passed along guidelines from an attorney for the ACLU, which he says he agrees with. They allow university employees to attend political rallies while off-duty and wear political buttons while off-duty and away from their workplace, noting that many parts of campus are not workplaces. They also allow employees to display partisan bumper stickers on their cars. White says the newsletter item from the ethics office last week was not intended as a university policy statement. Longtime Illinois Senator Dick Durbin is up for re-election this year. His Republican opponent is political novice physician Steve Sauerberg. The two sparred last night over the economy in their first debate broadcast in Chicago. Tony Arnold has more.
The debate started off cordially enough with, what else, the economy. Durbin, the second most powerful U.S. senator, talked about a meeting he had with top financial leaders in the country.
They told us 3 weeks ago, if we don't act and act quickly, the American economy can melt down and the global economy will melt down as well. I mean, those were words which brought a silence across the room.
Durbin says a financial rescue plan recently passed by Congress was approved out of necessity, and doing nothing wasn't an option. His opponent, Sauerberg, criticized Durbin for supporting the bill.
It got stuffed full of earmarks or pork, and I really hate to see that.
Sauerberg says he thinks there should have been a cut in corporate taxes in the final version of the bailout bill. Three other candidates are also running for the U.S. Senate seat, but did not participate in the debate. I'm Tony Arnold.
And you can hear that debate this evening on AM 580 at 6:30. Federal prosecutors have moved to delay the sentencing of convicted influence peddler Tony Rezko. The motion signals that the key fundraiser for Governor Al Blagojevich may be cooperating with prosecutors. Scott Mendelhoff is a former U.S. attorney, or assistant U.S. attorney in Chicago.
The government obviously would want to keep that conversation going in the hopes that they could extract as much as possible from Mr. Rezko.
Mendelhoff says Rezko would need to provide strong information to get a reduction in his sentence.
At this stage in a prosecution, generally speaking, the government is not going to sell the farm without a significant amount of help, and so it's not going to come cheap. And I would expect that the government would require quite a bit to agree to give Mr. Rezko anything substantial.
Rezko was set for sentencing October 28th. He was convicted of using his clout with Blagojevich's administration to force bribes and campaign donations from state contractors. A spokesperson for the governor could not be reached for comment. Getting caught with a small amount of marijuana in the city of Urbana used to get you a criminal charge, but that's not necessarily the case under a new ordinance passed by the Urbana City Council last night. Council members voted to allow police to issue ordinance violations to people who possess less than 10 grams of pot or any drug paraphernalia. That would mean a $200 fine instead of a crime processed through the state's attorney's office. City Attorney Ronald O'Neill says police asked for the option.
When you're dealing with people who have no criminal history and fairly small amounts of cannabis, it's useful to have an ordinance like this so that you don't hang a criminal case around someone for what, in the great scheme of things, is a fairly minor offense.
Neil says several Illinois cities already have the fine option in place for minor marijuana violations, including Champaign. The rule change has the backing of members of the local Green Party, though one candidate says police should not be allowed to keep the option of referring the offense to prosecutors. City Council, meanwhile, voted last night to name an old house on West Elm Street in Urbana a historic landmark against the wishes of its owner. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Preservationists say the 119-year-old Frank Bills House is architecturally and historically important and needs to be protected as a city landmark. Its owner, Julian Gorski of Normal, says the city's historic landmark ordinance is too vague and that his counterarguments were disregarded by the city's Historic Preservation Commission.
It is disheartening to realize that the fundamental basic rights of the homeowner mean so little in a community which I have called home.
Gorski has agreed to sell the Bills House to JSM Management, which wants to tear it down and build a new apartment building on the site. But Carolyn Baxley of the nonprofit Urbana Development Group says they've been in talks with Gorski about buying the house to save it.
There is a meeting of the minds in terms of price, but there is the existing contract with JSM to be considered. And he will have to work that out with them if he wants us to purchase the house.
4 yes votes plus 1 present vote provided the supermajority needed on the city council to approve landmark designation for Gorski's property, preventing its demolition. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
There are only a few hours left before the state's voter registration deadline, and county clerk's offices in East Central Illinois have seen a steady increase of people making sure their information is up to date. Champaign County Clerk Mark Sheldon notes there's a grace period beginning tomorrow and running through October 21st for those who can't avoid it, but he says today is the best time to deal with any problems with registration status.
People say, oh, do you hope a lot of people take advantage of it? And I always say, well, I hope nobody does. I hope everyone gets everything taken care of before the deadline. Hopefully most people, especially with all the attention on this election, we're kind of hopeful that most people won't have a need for it.
Both Sheldon and Vermilion County Clerk Lynn Foster say the increased interest in this year's presidential election is bringing more registrations. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. Over the next 2 weeks, AM 580 is teaming up with public radio stations across the country for what's called the Rural Issues Project. Stations are exploring what this year's presidential campaign means for rural America, from health care to small business to the issue of alternative fuels, especially ethanol. We heard AM 580's Jeff Bossert look into the fate of corn-based ethanol products yesterday. Today, we turn to another source of the fuel. As gas prices skyrocketed in recent months, they've had an especially big effect on rural parts of the country like Oklahoma, where drivers tend to travel longer distances, have less fuel-efficient cars, and make less money than people who live in larger cities. Some politicians say the long-term solution is to invest in domestic renewable fuels like ethanol, but as Scott Gurian reports, many drivers remain unconvinced.
Dave Farrell estimates he drives his Chevy pickup about 800 miles a week, installing water and sewer lines. Like a lot of drivers nowadays, he feels his hands are tied.
You know, I don't want to spend $100 every time I fill up, but at the same time, what are you going to do?
It's the end of the day, and he's just pulled up to a Phillips 66 gas station in Norman, Oklahoma. There's a Shell station just across the street whose prices are about 15 cents cheaper, but what drew Farrell here was a sign out front with bright red letters proudly proclaiming no ethanol in gasoline.
You can pay a little bit higher here, but you get more mileage than what you would with the ethanol. And with the ethanol, it's going to mess up your motors and all that, and in the long run, you're going to be paying for your motor.
Farrell's concerns are shared by many drivers and mechanics. The ethanol industry vigorously defends its product and says such claims are unfounded or blown out of proportion. But Consumer Reports found that vehicles using ethanol blends could get up to 30% fewer miles per gallon.
The challenges are that you're talking about a fuel additive that the engine wasn't necessarily designed for.
That's Stephen Rines with the Samuel Roberts Noble Foundation. He says he understands why some people are worried.
If you see where technology is going, I think about a year ago, Saab developed an ethanol-tailored engine, which actually was more efficient and provided more miles per gallon than conventional gasoline engines. The challenge is, though, that for each of us, we own the engine that's inefficient.
Rines' organization is experimenting with making ethanol from a giant weed called switchgrass. He says it would be far superior to ethanol made from corn because switchgrass is much easier and cheaper to grow, but he notes the science still has a long way to go.
This is not something that the next generation is going to have to inherit. We will see this in our own generation. So that part, it's relatively exciting, but it's also a bit of a challenge to wrap your mind around as to how much has to happen for that to be viable.
Rines also concedes that however ethanol is produced, the end product is chemically identical. So just using switchgrass instead of corn probably wouldn't solve most of drivers' frustrations. But he predicts other car makers will eventually follow the lead of Saab, and consumers will overcome whatever misperceptions they have about the new fuel. In order for all that to happen, the ethanol industry says it will need ongoing incentives from the federal government to continue its research. Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama has been a strong advocate of ethanol, but speaking last fall in Ames, Iowa, Republican John McCain said any future policies he would enact would end what he called the grab bag of handouts.
Yes, that means no ethanol subsidies, but it also means no rifle shot tax breaks for big oil. It means no line items for hydrogen, no mandates for other renewable fuels, and no big government debacles like the Dakota Synfuels plant. It means ethanol entrepreneurs get a level playing field to make their case and earn their profits.
Whatever alternative fuel or combination of fuels eventually emerge, it will take a while before those changes translate into real cost savings for drivers as the nation tries to build an entirely new transportation infrastructure that's not based on the use of petroleum. For Public Radio's Rural Issues Project, I'm Scott Gurian in Norman, Oklahoma.
Some rain has moved into our forecast. Meteorologist Ed Kieser says it'll be cloudy with periods of rain and thunderstorms today in western Illinois. Those showers and thunderstorms will move from west to east through the course of the day across Illinois and much of western Indiana. High temperatures from 67 in northwest Illinois to 80 in southern Indiana, 74 in Champaign-Urbana, with a chance of a few showers late in the morning and then periods of rain, maybe a thunderstorm in the afternoon. For tonight, cloudy with periods of rain and an isolated thunderstorm or two across the two states. Lows from around 50 in northwest Illinois to 62 in southern Indiana, 57 in Champaign-Urbana. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy in northern and west central Illinois. Elsewhere in the state, cloudy with a few scattered showers primarily during the morning. In Indiana, cloudy with periods of rain. Look for highs from 66 in northwest Illinois, 72 far south, 68 in Champaign-Urbana, with morning showers primarily. Cloudy early tomorrow night, then clearing with patchy fog forming, the low around 50, and on Thursday, sunny again with a high of 75. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 7th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.